You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I am Ira Flatto. First, there was spam clogging up your email box. Then there were cookies, the little files that websites place on your computer when you visit, allowing them to personalize their content on your future visits. Spam and cookies, annoying but relatively benign. Now comes spyware, software that sets up shop on your computer, sometimes without your consent or knowledge, and then tracks your computing habits. It traces your every move on the internet, learns what you like to do, where you like to visit, what your preferences are, and transmits that information to a third party. Could be somebody, an advertiser, somebody who's selling products, wants to sell you something. Besides invading your privacy, some spyware programs can also pick up sensitive information, like your passwords or your credit card numbers. Benign? Makes one yearn for the good old days of spam and cookies. And chances are pretty good that if you use the internet, some kind of spyware is lurking somewhere on your computer, maybe downloaded to your machine without you even knowing about it. Does that bother you? Should the federal government step in and try to curtail such practices, as it did for junk mail? Well, not yet. Last week, the Federal Trade Commission indicated that it thinks it's too early to put limits on spyware. The commissioners recommended letting the industry regulate itself for now. Let consumers learn how to avoid spyware. Caveat emptor, and we'll get back to you on this. But some of the states are saying, not so fast. Utah has already passed a law banning spyware, and there are currently bills in both houses of Congress that would make such tracking illegal. But some technology companies say that unless these laws are carefully written, they could outlaw legitimate software downloads onto your computer, such as those from Windows updates. You know, you constantly get those Windows updates. Maybe they won't come anymore if something is done too quickly, they say. So for the rest of the hour, we'll be talking about spyware. What is it? How it works? And what the new laws would do about it. We'll also talk about technological fixes. There are things that you can do to keep spyware off of your computer. There are several anti-spyware products out there, and one of my guests has reviewed all of them, and we'll be here to talk about which ones he thinks are pretty good. If you'd like to join our conversation, our number is 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. Now let me introduce them. Chris J. Hufnagel is the Associate Director of the Electronic Privacy Information Center in Washington, and he joins us today from our NPR studios there. Welcome to the program. John Kleiman is a contributing editor at PC Magazine. He's based in Seattle, and he joins us from the member station KUOW there. Welcome to the program, John.
Good afternoon, Ira.
Hi there. Larry Abramson is an NPR correspondent, and he's in our Washington studios. Welcome back, Larry. And let's ask you, John, first. There was an article, and I was reading in PC Magazine, that there are 78,000 spyware programs out there? Is that right?
Well, you know, the number is probably going up every day. There is really a proliferation of these things, and some of them are pretty threatening. Some of them are a little more benign, but they are all over the place.
Tell us exactly. I sort of painted broad strokes. Tell us exactly what spyware is.
Well, defining spyware is a bit of a slippery task because the term sort of encompasses this whole range of products. I think one of the common threads is these are products that tend to monitor your behavior as you're using your computer. And maybe they're doing that so they can pop up custom ads. Maybe they're tracking your behavior and sending it back to a company somewhere so they can see what sites you're visiting. On a more extreme note, you have these programs called keyloggers that can actually record every keystroke you type on your computer, and later someone could sift through that information looking for sensitive things like your social security number, your account numbers, passwords, things like that that could present a security risk. So there's this whole variety of things that fall into the rubric spyware, and in fact, the term is often used to describe also these sort of generalized nuisances that don't have other names, things that hijack your browser maybe and take you to sites you don't want to go to, or recently I've been reading about, although I haven't run into personally, a product that will send out instant messages to people on your buddy list if you're a user of something like AOL Instant Message Instant Messenger, for example. So it may be sending out advertising that looks like it's coming from you even though it's not.
Mm-hmm. And how does this stuff get onto your computer, Chris Hufnagel?
Oh, there's a number of ways you can become bundled in software that you download. There are very tricky dialogue boxes that can be posed to a user that make it look like you have to say yes to something, and then it can be downloaded and installed. And there's also the problem of so-called drive-by downloads, where the software is almost automatically installed on your computer. A lot of the problem has to do with security holes in popular internet browsers, too. So that can exacerbate the problem.
Mm-hmm. Does this affect the range of all the platforms out there, Windows equally with Macintosh or Linux?
Oh, no. I think the vast majority of the problem is focused on Microsoft Windows computers. There might be some spyware out there for Macs, but I am unaware of any on the Linux platform.
Mm-hmm. And there's Unix system underneath a Mac, so I guess that would be sort of the same family. You don't know, as you say, you don't know when you're getting downloaded, right? You could be doing one thing and someone will sneak the spyware onto your computer?
That is a possibility, and there's an additional possibility of a spyware program using a so-called trickler. This is a small program that runs in the background, and so if you remove the spyware, the trickler may be triggered, and it may re-download and reinstall the spyware. This is what we refer to as respawning, and it is increasingly a problem.
Sounds like a Vincent Price movie here.
Yes.
With a tingler. But it could do some pretty scary things. Larry Abramson, you had it on your computer infecting yours, did you not?
Yes, I am a recovering spyware victim, a member of Spyware Anonymous. I came home one day and my wife gave me a dirty look and said, you know, there's all of these icons on our desktop linked to porn sites. And our son had seen them and was giggling about them. And you need to clean this stuff up right away. And I, you know, hadn't done anything naughty. And my son and I actually went down and tried to remove these icons together. And I would select an icon and he would try to delete it quickly, but then it reappeared somewhere else and we played this little cat and mouse game for a while. And finally I realized this was more than just a bunch of icons. This was a piece of a browser helper, so supposedly, that was installed and that I could not remove without doing multiple scans of my entire system. I used SpyBot and AdAware, these tools that are out there for free that are available to remove these programs, but even they couldn't remove some parts of this toolbar. And as Chris said, it would often reappear after I rebooted. I'm not even clear how I got it off or whether I got it off. It's not there anymore, but for all I know, there could still be programs that are lurking, monitoring my surfing habits. And I think that's what makes people the most paranoid, is not knowing whether you have it and having to constantly check and see whether you do.
Is it, and I'll ask this of all of you, is it so close? I mean, does it resemble so much of the junk that constantly gets, you know, little pop-up windows and things that we probably don't even know if it's on our computers or not?
Well, just to continue with my experience, Ira, this was so bad. It did not resemble little pop-ups or anything. This was, as Chris said, it was spawning new icons, constantly sending me messages, taking over the entire screen, offering to send me software that would remove spyware, basically offering to undo the problem that it created. So this was a monster. This was not just a little bug.
Mm-hmm. John Kleiman, let's talk about what you can do to fight back for this stuff.
Well, there's a couple of things you can do. I think one of them is to take smart preventive measures in the first place. And this is no guarantee, of course, that you won't get infected. But there are things you can do, like be very careful about the software you download in the first place. Do a little bit of research. If something is too good to be true, it may well be. One of the ways a lot of people get infested with some spyware is actually through these P2P file sharing programs that, of course, are notorious for allowing people to share music. But a lot of them contain some spyware components as well. Mm-hmm. So you want to make sure that you're careful about what you're downloading, that you don't, you know, if a dialog box pops up on the screen and says, to view this website, click yes to install our browser helper first. You really need to think about that, because the things you're downloading may do all kinds of nefarious things. It's also a smart idea to keep your Windows updates current, for example, so you can patch some of these holes that allow things like drive-by downloads. Mm-hmm. At the same time, once you've been infected, or if you want sort of a more an additional level of security there, you can download a variety of anti-spyware tools. Many of them are free. Many of them have free trials. And even if you purchase them, they tend to be relatively low cost, about $30 to $40. And these tools are a little bit like a virus scanner, which most people are probably familiar with. You can run it in the background. It will warn you in some cases when something that's suspected spyware is being downloaded, and it'll scan your computer periodically and look for traces of software that may be dangerous.
Okay, what would be some of the best ones that you've looked at them all? What would you recommend?
Well, I wouldn't say we've looked at them all. There's quite a variety, but we did test about 14 of them, and the one that we found was, well, I should back up and say there's good news and there's bad news. The bad news is
always there's a left and a right hand. So.
Well, the bad news is we didn't find that any of them could eliminate all the spyware threats that we found and that we infected computers with. I think Larry's experience is a little bit typical in that some of the spyware is incredibly sophisticated, and you'll make an attempt to delete it. It may look like it's gone. It may come back later after you reboot the system, something like that. Mm-hmm. And even these professional tools that you would pay for were not always successful in eliminating these things. That said, one of the best ones we found was a product called Spy Sweeper, and the company that makes that is called WebRoot.
Uh-huh. 1-800-989-8255. Let's see if we can get a phone call or two in here. Lots to talk about. Donald in Ypsilanti, Michigan. Hi, Donald.
Hi there. I actually work for a Michigan-based internet service provider doing telephone tech support, and we come across this stuff all the time. Every day we're getting calls on spyware issues. Either they hijack the browser or people just can't get online, they can't log into our webmail system. But we found that almost all the spyware affects Internet Explorer and Windows specifically. If you're using Netscape or Mozilla, it doesn't affect you. And if you're using all our Mac customers, we can't even find a single piece of spyware that works on a Mac or a Linux system.
So it's Internet Explorer on a Windows system that you're finding.
Exactly.
And why not Netscape? That's interesting. Because, well, that's like 5% of the market now, right? Or something like that. So you don't even attack Netscape anymore. You don't program for it. Well, what do you think of that, John? Is about right?
Well, I think obviously Windows and Internet Explorer are the most popular operating system and browser out there, so they present the biggest target. And if you want to make a big impact as a spyware developer, you're going to go for those.
Donald,
and of course, some people.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. I didn't mean to
interrupt. Oh, I was going to say, of course, there. You know, Microsoft also has had repeated issues with security in some cases, and there are some people who harbor sort of anti-Microsoft tendencies, of course, and like to delight in making Microsoft look bad.
So, Donald, as an ISP provider, are these people really mad as heck and they're not going to take it anymore? Or what? How do you calm them down?
Well, if they're local, people actually bring in their computers and we'll help them get it off their systems for them.
It's that bad that you have to bring your computer in?
Sometimes, wow. A lot of times we just point them at websites for a couple different pieces of anti-spyware programs, and they're happy.
Yeah. All right, well, thanks for calling.
Thank you.
1-800-989-8255. Larry, what are our elected leaders in Washington doing about it these days?
Well, they're kind of jumping on the problem all of a sudden, Ira. There's a huge amount of attention, even though some of this legislation was introduced last year, and I think the virulence of some of these latest versions has grabbed a lot of attention, and any legislator who's suddenly found these porn site icons on his desktop is motivated to act pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. There are a few pieces of legislation on the federal and on the state level. One is called the Spy Block Act in the Senate, sponsored by Montana Senator Burns, and it's a very complicated piece of legislation, I think you'd have to say, because it tries to define what spyware is to a certain extent, and it raises a lot of the sensitive issues about trying to write legislation that is directed at a specific technology. First, it says that you can't install software without somebody's consent, and it has to be uninstallable. But then it goes out of its way to exempt a lot of pieces of software like Internet Explorer, which is installed on your machine when you buy it.
We just heard that's the worst culprit.
And it cannot be uninstalled, right? As we recall in the antitrust suit, they tried to make Microsoft make Internet Explorer uninstallable, but it's not. It's part of the operating system, or so they say. Another piece of legislation in the House, sponsored by Congresswoman Bono, would basically allow the Federal Trade Commission, more or less, to decide what is spyware and allow them to go after it. And it basically just reinforces their ability to prosecute people who deceive consumers, which they can already do. And many people think they already ought to be able to prosecute spyware manufacturers by just saying you're lying to consumers, you're cheating them, you're stealing their information. That's illegal. Mm-hmm. I think there's a growing awareness that maybe the best way to go after this stuff is to outlaw the behavior, the deception, as opposed to trying to write legislation that outlaws a specific kind of software and then having to say, oh, Microsoft, America Online, Google, we don't mean you. We mean all the bad guys out there. But it's not easy to write these laws without hauling in some good stuff.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about spyware this hour on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. So, that makes sense from trying not to, you know, nobody in Congress likes to point out somebody else, to go the pokey eye in the other person's
I think what they don't want to do, Ira, is they don't want to find out a couple years from now that there's a service out there that consumers want, which turns out to be illegal. Or they don't want to find out that they wrote a law that made something like automatic updates for virus software or a software installation illegal, because that's also automatically installed. Sometimes it doesn't ask for your consent in the way that you might like. And it's pretty tough to write software that accommodates all the various types of downloading that the consumers do online right now.
Christoph Nagel, what's your take on this?
I think Larry is exactly right. We really need to address privacy more holistically, and if we try to ban a certain technology, we're going to end up with other privacy problems in the future that aren't addressed by the law. The other problem is, and just in the kind of raw process of sausage making of lobbying and legislation, is that it is true that the powerful companies will come in and get exemptions from the spyware law, just as Microsoft has. And at the end of the day, less powerful actors have restrictions, but the institutional power doesn't have to conform to the law or change their practices. And what I don't know if it's fully been articulated here, but a lot of the problem here does deal with the integration of the Microsoft Internet Explorer browser with the operating system.
But that fight's already been lost in the United States.
Well, perhaps, and I think, but what is enabling so much of this software is this linkage. So that Internet Explorer can install things and engage in certain behavior that it probably should not be engaged in.
Well, but you know,
Larry, and I think I should just jump in and say Microsoft is very sensitive to this this problem. And yesterday in a House hearing, they said, well, we are jumping on this problem from a technological perspective. We are going to make, for example, the default security setting for the newest version of Windows XP medium instead of low. So it will be very, very difficult to have your computer at a low setting, which could allow spyware or adware to get onto your computer
in
the future.
I've got to jump in here and take a break, so everybody stay where you are. We'll be right back after this short break. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flato. We're talking this hour about spyware with my guests, Larry Abramson, NPR correspondent, John Kleiman, contributing editor at PC Magazine, Chris J. Hufnagel, associate director of the Electronic Privacy Information Center in Washington. Our number, 1-800-989-8255. And when I rudely interrupted Larry, he was telling us that Microsoft did say yesterday that they're going to change the level of protection on the default level, you said, on their browser?
Have a tougher security setting that will make it tougher to download something accidentally. They're also going to make it easier for you to say, I don't ever want software from this company. Right now, when you get an install dialog box, you can say, always trust content from this company. In the future, it will say, always do not trust, so that you can at least block some of this stuff. So they're trying to make the default settings for Windows a little bit tougher, but I think they really don't go anywhere near far enough to satisfy some of the technical experts who think that their system is just completely porous.
Christoph Hufnagel, the technology industry says that if you outlaw spyware, you could also ban legitimate software that you might be throwing out the baby with the bathwater, like software that uploads Windows updates, things like that.
It is true that legislation in this area has to be carefully crafted so that it does not block virus updating or patch updating functions. And so that is a legitimate concern, although exceptions could be written that would allow that type of software that individuals want to operate while blocking some of the more invasive programs from operating.
1-800-989-8255. Stephanie in St. Louis. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi. I wanted to say that, first of all, I'm very upset because I was just performing a speech on this very topic, and it would have been very helpful had you been discussing this a month ago.
I'm sorry, but let me go in the Wayback Machine and turn this.
I want to know, well, number one, what's the difference between adware and spyware? Is it just a difference between name, or is adware more benign? And also, how aware are people with the software that you willingly download? Because I know I live in a dorm, and I am constantly being asked to get rid of these porn viruses, in quotes, and I just say, no, get rid of Weatherbug, and I uninstall that, and I go to download.com, and I download adware, and that solves the whole problem. Mm-hmm. So what about the programs that you willingly download for free, and what's the difference between ad software?
John Kleiman, can you explain those terms that she was using?
Well, yeah, the terms are a little bit loose and gray around the edges, but adware typically is perceived as being a little bit more benign because maybe it's something you've consented to, perhaps not explicitly, but you've agreed that by downloading this software, you'll allow yourself to be subjected to ads.
Yeah, you get something for free, but it's not really for free. You have to watch the ads as they pop up.
Exactly, yeah. Right.
And so is that typically loaded with these things? With the spyware?
That typically, if you download products like Kazaa, for example, is one of the popular P2P file sharing systems. There are various free games you can download, things like that. They will often include adware, and they may even tell you right up front that by doing this, you're installing adware, and you can expect to be subjected to these things. But there's also this question of sort of how informed is people's consent. Are they really reading all the fine print when they install these things? And for that matter, are the privacy trade-offs or the sort of level of intrusiveness that people are willing to accept, to what extent does that vary from person to person? So
when I downloaded Kazaa, it only had pop-ups when the Kazaa was actually open, which was fine. But I've also had spyware where when I left my computer on, because I had cable internet, and I don't even think that mattered, I had hundreds of windows where my computer would just get so bogged down, I had to turn the whole thing off and just start all over again. But you can download Kazaa Lite, I know, through Kazaa, and Kazaa Lite has no spyware.
You think no spyware. Because real spyware would be spying, right? Wouldn't tell you that.
And there is, you know, some of the spyware, some of the malicious stuff is really sneaky, as we've talked about. Some of it will reincarnate itself after you think you've swept it away. Some of it, I've actually seen some that will actively terminate any of the anti-spyware applications that it sees running. So you pop one of these open to run a scan and see if you're infected, and it squashes it before it can even finish scanning.
Well, thanks for calling, Stephanie. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
Is it as bad? I mean, as Larry was saying, I mean, if you have spyware, should you just wipe your hard disk clean and reinstall everything? Or, you know, if it's just taken over like it has in Larry's?
That seems a little bit like a, you know, that's the sort of nuclear option of last resort, and I think that nobody would suggest that as the first step. Certainly downloading some of the free anti-spyware tools, another, you know, one of the well-respected ones that is free is Spybot Search and Destroy. There are a number of these things that you can run, and you may be able to eliminate the infestations that you have. In some cases, there are also there are a number of online databases that describe the various spyware programs, so you can find out exactly what the threat is, what the risk is, and often they provide uninstallation instructions as well, though you need to be a technically savvy user to follow those.
Hi, Lee.
This is Larry. I was going to say that Wired magazine had a wonderful story of a woman who was so frustrated, an elderly woman who was inundated with porn sites, and she finally just took her machine and placed it under a statue of the Virgin Mary. which is something that that was her last resort. Some people might want to try that since it might be the only thing that works.
Oh, well, Lee in Jacksonville, Florida has a better idea, Lee.
I was actually calling about the possibilities of people who have spyware getting legal recourse.
That's what I meant. Okay. Can you get a class action together? I mean, can you get a class action suit and say, we didn't pay for this, we didn't ask for this, it's clogging everything up.
Yeah,
make your software better so it doesn't do this stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, I read a repair person. Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Lee.
I was going to respond. This is Larry. A privacy group here in Washington has filed a complaint with the Federal Trade Commission about a specific spyware company. I don't think we know whether or not the investigation is actually proceeding. But that is a possible recourse: is to go to either your state attorney general or to the Federal Trade Commission, explain what's happened to you, and see whether or not the deception that's gone on or the computer trespass that you feel you've experienced is enough to make a case out of. Some of the laws that are being written don't necessarily give consumers the right to take private action like this. And a lot of people feel that allowing consumers to do this rather than waiting for the attorneys general to jump in is really creating a very efficient army. But you could always do that, although it's going to take a lot of your own time and energy because this is not something that most attorneys general are really focused on right now.
Our states, you know, a lot of attorneys generals are, you know, have been banding together for like clean air laws that the federal government isn't working well enough for their state. Are they beginning to look at each other across their boundaries and say, you know, we don't have to be joining states on this. We could be all over the country, and maybe that is where the power is, or consumers, as you're saying, doing it for them.
Well, right now what's happening is the states are acting first, and I think that that is what may propel the federal government to get involved, because there's a lot of concern about creating the proverbial patchwork of regulation. Utah has passed an anti-spyware law. It's currently in litigation by a company, I won't call it a spyware company, that says it's unfair, but it would turn out to be the first kind of anti-spyware legislation, but it's fraught with quite a few problems. And I think, as with spam, you're going to see people saying, we don't want to have 50 different anti-spyware laws.
And how soon can we expect the federal legislation to maybe come to a vote? Are we talking months, year? Anything?
Oh, if only I were that wise to be able to tell you what Congress is going to do, I could make a mint. I would be, personally, my assessment is that this will take a while. Back during the days when people were concerned about targeted advertising online in the late 90s during the tech boom, it took years and years to even get Congress to consider legislation. Spam took many, many years before people could even agree that the problem was, in fact, serious enough for Congress to act upon. I think this time Congress is trying to jump a little bit quicker, but the different language in the different pieces of legislation shows that there's still a whole lot of work to be done before, again, a Republican Congress is going to agree to pass regulations on an industry like this.
Yeah. I'm Myra Flato. This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Chris, was that you jumping in there?
This was John, and I was just going to mention that I couldn't help but note that despite the passage of the federal canned spam legislation, for example, I haven't noticed that my inbox is suddenly free of junk mail. So
yeah.
I have some skepticism about the degree to which legislation can address this issue, and I'd be curious to know what Chris or Larry think about that.
That's a great point, and I'll tell you, it did take over 30 states to pass spam legislation before Congress was willing to legislate in the field. And the main reason why Congress passed the Canned Spam Act was actually to preempt a California law that would have basically prohibited spam. It would have required opt-in consent before an individual could spam you. So Congress in this field has often acted to actually protect the companies, the very companies that are sending us spam. It is also true that generally in privacy, we've seen that the leadership, the real leadership, comes from the states, and most of the privacy laws in the United States that are currently on the federal level actually originate from a state that experimented with a specific privacy law that was very successful and as a result was nationalized.
1-800-989-8255. I think time for one more call. Angela in Corvallis. Hi, Angela.
Hey there. I've got a quick question. I just was browsing through my computer files, and I noticed I bumped up in my valued customer file or whatever a ton of this. And do I just go through and delete everything that looks suspicious? How do I discern bad from good?
John Kleinman, well, how do you begin the anti-spam on your computer? Get one of those programs that you talked about?
I think your best bet is to get one of the programs, because they really they have pretty comprehensive databases of these so-called traces that spyware programs leave in their wake, and they're likely to be able to automate a lot of this. But if you're also curious for your own information, there are sites like there's a company named Pest Patrol. They have a fairly extensive kind of human-readable site that describes what each of what all these various spyware programs do. So if there's something you're curious about, if you wonder what kind of monitoring it's been doing, or what it's doing to you, you can do a little bit of homework there as well.
Ira, a cautionary note there. I would not go through your computer and start deleting files if you don't know where they are. I know somebody, it was me, who deleted a very important video driver because he mistook it for spyware. And I spent days with tech support reinstalling that video driver. So you should be very cautious about just uninstalling software if you don't know what it is.
Larry,
Larry,
have you been driven to the Mac side yet?
No. I haven't. It would take a lot to do that.
I'm a Mac user. Show. I'll get you on that side sooner or later.
I know we're getting email right now saying just buy a Mac and you won't have this problem.
Right. We always do. 1-800-989-8255 is our... Now, I know there are other little programs, and I had one on my Mac, and it's kind of interesting. The other way of looking at it, you know, there are programs, and certainly on the Windows side, I know, because I have a PC also, that will ask you before it sends something out on the internet, before it replies to something, a request. It'll ask you for permission to do that. Is that helpful?
Firewall.
Well, yeah.
Sounds like a firewall.
Well,
It's extremely helpful. The only problem is it's difficult for some users to operate the firewall. They can be complex, and if you misconfigure it, of course, it will disconnect you from the internet.
Yeah, you don't want to do that. And you certainly, yeah. Larry is absolutely right. You don't want to go around fooling around inside removing stuff that...
Well, and we had the same problem when the cookie debate started many years ago, where people were told, well, just don't accept cookies. And for many users, you know, tinkering around with the preferences in their browser is a very intimidating experience. They disabled cookies. They couldn't get to a lot of the websites that they wanted to get to.
Yeah.
And they're going to have the same kind of experience that's going to make them not want to use their computer.
I have one 10-second answer because I'm running out of time. Even if we get all this legislation, how does it stop spam or these programs from coming from abroad, where our own laws mean nothing to, you know, people offshore?
There is international cooperation in consumer protection now today that's more developed than it's ever been before. And the Federal Trade Commission really is working on building relationships with other governments to deal with this problem.
All right. We'll leave it here and revisit this topic, because it's probably going to get murkier as it goes along. Thank you all for joining us. John Kleinman, who is contributing editor of PC Magazine. He's got some good recommendations on his site in PC Magazine for spyware, anti-spy stuff. Chris Hufnagel, Associate Director of the Electronic Privacy Information Center in Washington, and NPR correspondent Larry Abramson. Thank you all, and good luck to you.
Thanks.
Our program is produced by Annette Heist and senior producer Karen Vergoth. Charles Berquist is our web producer and our director, and also our intern is Erica Altman. If you missed any of the links we talked about, the spyware, stuff like that, surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com. Also, Science Friday's Kids Connection is there. Free curricula for your schools. You can use our Science Friday shows for teaching material. And also, you can also surf the web and find other connections that we talk about. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.